Let's think about noise. Noise. So we've been through the message, the medium, noise. Noise is really anything that impedes communication. It'd be like if we were trying to have this class here tonight while Justin Bieber was playing. Okay? Not only would that be blasphemous, but it would be interrupting what we're doing, right? Impeding communication. Really, when we think about anything that's going to be needlessly offensive to somebody hearing about Christ. So, cultural issues that aren't moral, right? You're familiar with these passages, 1 Corinthians 9:20. To the Jews, I became as a Jew so that I might win the Jews. To those under the law, as under the law, though not myself being under the law, but so that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law. Though not being without the law of God, but under the law of Christ, it's not that he's just at the party with the cocaine and he's sniffing a line of cocaine. He's saying, I don't engage in immoral stuff, no. But so that I might win those who are without the law. I have become all things to all men so that I may by all means save some. This is a biblical concept, thoroughly. To be in the world, well, yeah, let's think about this passage. John 17:15. I do not ask you to take them out of the world, but to keep them from the evil one. Yes, this is where that expression comes from. I'm in the world, but not of the world. It's actually not in Scripture. Jesus nowhere says that. But the concept is there. I don't want you to take them out of the world, but to put them in the world, just not be of the world. What's interesting is many churches, they're different where they should be the same, and they're the same where they should be different. They're different where they should be the same, like the music people in our culture listen to, the movies, the bars, all that kind of stuff. We should be the same on that. We see the same art. We're into the same stuff. And yet, they're the same where they should be different. So many churches today are totally immersed in materialism, greed, ego. That's the part where they're supposed to be different. They're exactly like the world on that front. But no, we don't listen to that music and we don't listen to watch those movies. And so basically one of the best illustrations I've heard on this is how do you best keep your kid from drowning? Is it that you just protect them from water, any source of water for their whole life? Maybe at first, yeah. You don't want them just throwing him in the deep end. The best way to keep your kid from drowning is to teach him how to swim. So it's the difference between isolating a person and inoculating a person. Inoculation is where you give somebody a little bit of the virus, a deadened version, so that their system can fight against it. And that's what we want. We want to be in the world, just not of the world. Yes, Jesus says, I've also sent them into the world. You're in the world, just not of it. So, I know I'm kind of preaching to the choir here, but here's one way of thinking about this is, what do we want to be most important? Do we want to make it as difficult as possible to sin, or as easy as possible for people to come to Christ? We'll see this from time to time. People trying to bring in more and more restrictions. Oh, what should our view be on this? And what should our view be on that? And we've just kind of kept a really laissez-faire approach when it comes to these things. We've argued you have to use discernment. You have to use your best judgment. We're not saying that there aren't dangers. There are dangers. But we need to leave this open to discernment and to conscience. For me, I was one of those guys, I could not go to a party without getting high. I could not do it. That joint would come around the room, it would get to me, I would smoke that thing 11 times out of 10. I just always would. So I got to the point where I was like, I need to get some freedom from this. I can't trust myself. Other people I've talked to, they have a drinking problem. It's not that bad, but they just feel like, you know, I'm drinking a couple beers every night of the week. I have one good friend who's just like, I'm giving up drinking. Okay, that's your conscience telling you that. I actually think it was a pretty good idea. For other people, one of our elders, he would say to me, I don't watch movies with any kind of sex scenes in them. He came from a really wild kind of background. And he was just, he quoted that line from Clint Eastwood, "A man knows his limits," he used to say with a big grin on his face. But what I liked about him was he wouldn't watch it, but he didn't put everyone else under law. He didn't have a problem if you watched it. It's just like, I don't want to watch that. It's too stumbling. So cool. But we want to lead this over to discernment and conscience. Really what we're saying here is we want to become a student of our culture. We don't want any noise. We want to purge any possible noise, like Christianese, which you're going to be sick of hearing me say this because it comes up twice a quarter, and yet I'm sick of hearing it out of your mouths. That's mean. Purging Christianese. Ugh. Some things, I think what it is some of the worst offenders here are the new believers. I'm actually noticing that. It's a new believer who's picking up on different lingo. And so they're like, oh, this is cool. People talk like this, they talk like that. And they're the ones who use all these terms like edify and sanctification and pray against Satan. He brings in noise, that's for sure. How does Jesus put it in Matthew 13? They heard the gospel and they came in, Satan came in and stole it right out of their heart. They heard it, they were thinking about doing it, something distracted them. I can't tell you how many times I've seen this happen. The one case of the girl who was like, I'm coming out to your Bible study, interested in Christ, she got into a fender bender. Right before. I mean, not enough to like be hurt, but just enough to be knocked out. Didn't come to the meeting. Never came. We were talking to the one dude the one time. Not much to look at, okay? Not what you would call debonair, handsome. I don't really know what a handsome man looks like, to be honest. But I usually think a handsome man is pale and kind of tall with bug eyes. But anyways, this guy came out and we were like, he just came to Christ, real authentic conversion. And the next week, he was a server at a table. And one of the hottest women he'd ever met before wrote down her phone number and said, call me, let's go out. How did that happen? I don't know. We never saw him again. Don't be needlessly offensive. Don't be needlessly offensive. Really being up on culture, knowing what people are into, knowing what would be offensive to them. There was words I would use a decade ago I ought never use today because it would be considered offensive. We have to think as though the non-Christian is sitting there and we're speaking to our Christian brother at times, and yet we got to speak to the non-Christian at the same time. Never want them to feel alienated. Number four is the sender, being able to create good conversation. Yeah, how do you start a conversation? Do you know how to do that? Do the people whom you're mentoring know how to do that? How do you start a conversation? They might not know. Do they know how to carry on a conversation? Like the one guy I know who it's like talking to a wooden Indian. You know, one of those carved statues? I'm sorry, wooden Native American. And you know, it's one of those statues. It's just like, you know, I try and talk to him. I mean, he's my buddy. He's my Christian brother. He doesn't know how to carry on a conversation. Other people you talk to, they make it all about themselves. And it just makes me wonder, how is this person going to ever be able to lead somebody to Christ if they don't know how to start or carry on a conversation with a fellow believer? We got to teach them this. We got to show them how to love and to talk, how to take interest in other people. Have you ever been sitting like I have on the porch and you've got two different people talking at each other rather than with each other? That's a crucial prepositional distinction. Talking at the person, not with the person. You look at her, she shares something. You look at him, it's like he didn't even hear it. And he shares something. And then she tries to interrupt. And you hear the beginning of what she interrupted with. You know what I mean? But then he keeps talking. And then 2 minutes later, she picks right back up with what she was going to say. And it's like, I've looked at two people and I'm like, They could very well be in separate rooms right now. They don't know how to talk, take interest. It's kind of like we have to be able to teach people, okay, now it's your turn. I'm listening to you. And how to share as well. It can creep people out if all we're doing is asking them personal questions about their life. I wouldn't like that. I mean, to some degree, it shows that they're interested in my life and me. At the other time, I want a little bit of give and take. I want to hear what they think and back and forth. Learning to listen. Paul Little, from his excellent book from 1966. Excellent book. How to Give Your Faith Away. He says, the voice any person likes to hear best is his own. Many people would give anything to find someone who would just listen to them. When we listen long enough, we not only begin to know and understand an individual, we also gain his gratitude and his willingness to listen to us, enabling us later to speak relevantly to him. Boy, is that true. If I sit and listen to this person for an hour and then it's my turn, they're going to listen back. You've earned that right. This illustration is that of a meat thermometer. When you look at the turkey on Thanksgiving, I don't know how my mother and now my buddies are really good at cooking turkey. I never know how it's done. On the outside, it looks cooked. That bird is cooked. And they'll pull out the meat thermometer and they'll stick it into the bird and be like, 130 degrees, not done. How could you tell unless you had a meat thermometer? That thing is totally raw on the inside. The same thing is true with listening. On the outside, you could get one perspective, and as you start to draw out what's happening in the person's heart, it's like sticking a meat thermometer into their chest and figure out, in a nonviolent way, to figure out what is really the issue here. James says in James 1:19, be quick to listen, slow to speak. Shut up and listen. Get your ears open and your mouth closed. Galatians 5:22, one of the fruits of the Spirit is self-control. I'm not just going to open my mouth every time I have something to say. I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to listen, try and understand. This involves a back and forth. I'm not just saying it's question after question. That doesn't feel like a conversation. It feels like an interrogation. But I'm self-controlled. Proverbs 18:2, fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their own opinions. Spouting off before listening to the facts is both shameful and foolish. Proverbs 18:13. Now, it seems to me that this is referring to conflict. And yet, I do think it's relevant for evangelism. Spouting off, you're not listening to what they believe, why they believe it, where they've come from. You're just trying to launch into your thing. That's shameful. A plan in the heart of a man is like deep water, but a man of understanding draws it out. Proverbs 25. Proverbs 10:19. When words are many, sin is not absent. He who holds his tongue is wise. Yes. Words are many. You're probably sinning in there. Proverbs 17:28. Even a fool is thought to be wise if he keeps silent, and discerning if he holds his tongue. That is so true. How many people have you talked to that just look like they know what they're talking about because they don't talk? It's kind of a way to be self-protective, I guess, too. And yet, in a new situation, trying to pick up what other people think. Think of Jesus, who is the example, par excellence, of what it means to live by faith. God incarnate, asking 150 questions in the Gospels. Why would he do that? Why wouldn't he just depend on the Spirit to read the people's minds? He can. Mark 2, it says he could see them reasoning in their hearts. And he's asking questions? Why? It isn't for his benefit. It's for their benefit. Why does God do it? Genesis 3, where are you? Genesis 4, why is your face fallen? Why is your, how's he put it to Cain? Why are you so angry? Why is your countenance fallen? Good use of questions. One of the benefits of being a good listener is that you discover misconceptions. You might think that everyone is a Richard Dawkins type person. Not likely. Probably 1% of people you'll ever run into is that skeptical. Why are you treating every person like they're totally against God? They might not be. Maybe they're actually into God. discovering what their misconceptions are. See where God is moving in their life. You could find that out by asking a question. This really takes the pressure off of us, too. I don't know if you ever get scared about sharing your faith. You can ask some questions. It really takes us, you know, the focus really isn't on me. Trying to explore what a person thinks and feels makes the person feel understood. It also shares the burden of proof. There's times where somebody is saying things and they're like, so what do you think? And you give your view, but by asking good questions, what you can do is be like, well, that's my view. What's your view on this? What's your account of it? Types of questions. There's clarifying questions, echoing questions, wondering questions, reminding questions, and the agitating questions. My favorite. What's a clarifying question? Somebody says, I can't believe God would allow so much suffering in this world. Clarifying question. Okay, so when you say allow, you are saying like you don't think he causes it to happen, but he's permitting it to happen. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Okay, just trying to clarify. An echoing question. I can't believe God would allow so much suffering to happen. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. So it seems like your root problem is trying to rephrase it. With so much suffering in the world, it's kind of hard for you to believe that God, why would he let that happen? Is that what you're saying? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Makes the person feel like you get them. You're not just talking at them. Wondering questions. This is where somebody says, I can't believe God would allow so much evil and suffering in the world. You say, you know, when you said that, it got me thinking. I was just wondering, like, have you ever been through serious suffering? Could you tell me about that? What was that like? Reminding questions. That's where we talked today and somebody said something like, sometimes I just wonder if God really is there. And the bell rings. Oh, and I go home that night and I'm like, I missed my opportunity. The person was seeking after God and I was right there. I didn't say anything. Reminding question. You show up to class the next week and you're like, hey, I was thinking about you this week. You were? Yeah. And I was reminded of how you said you wondered if God is really there. And made me wonder what you're thinking about that. Reminding. Then there's agitating questions. This is where you're kind of driving a point. Like the rest of these, you're just trying to understand. Agitating questions are used for rhetorical effect. Like if somebody says, I can't believe God would allow so much suffering in the world. Well, then how do you deal with suffering? That's an agitating question. Or I don't believe that there is such a thing as truth. Do you believe that that statement itself is true? That's an agitating question. Let's think of opening questions. Would you consider yourself an open-minded person, or do you feel like you've already made up your mind about God? I think that's a pretty fair question. You know, if somebody asked me that question, have you made up your mind, are you closed-minded? I'd say no. I really enjoy studying world religions. I spend most of my time reading books from secular people, from other perspectives. I would definitely consider myself open-minded. What do you got? What do you believe? Why? Love that kind of a conversation. So I think it's fair to ask that. Are you open-minded? Or have you already made up your mind? I've asked this question before. You know, growing up, going to church, I never heard the message that you need to receive Christ. Maybe that was taught. I never heard that. Have you ever heard something like that before? Would you be willing to call out to God to see if he exists? Like there's the sinner's prayer. There's also the skeptic's prayer. This is the skeptic's prayer. Would you be willing to call out to God? What do you have to lose? How much faith do you need to receive a gift? The question, have you ever been to a Bible study like this before? It's a great question. What's your experience been like? Do you have any Christian friends or family? What was your experience with them? Was it good, bad, ugly? I've had so many people just open up. Oh, man, well, my mom was really cool, my dad. But my aunt, holy cow, there can't be a God if my aunt exists. You know, my grandmother, you wouldn't believe what she said. And one of these questions, you basically get to hear someone's heart. You get to hear their pain, how they've been hurt, and you actually know what to address. Did you grow up going to church? How does this meeting compare to your past experience? Just trying to get them to see for themselves what's the difference. Kind of an aggressive question, but I think it'd be a pretty good opening question is, so what do you think is the main thing holding you back from receiving Christ? Sometimes people are kind of confused, and so talking to them is confusing because they themselves are confused. And just to try and help them identify, what is it? What is it that's holding you back? Keys to good evangelism, assuming that people are open. These are the best evangelists. They assume people are open to the gospel until proven wrong. Not judging by appearances, not judging by what they think, but assuming God is after this person. The proverb, the most interesting person is the most interested person. I like that. What is it about her? I like, she's always interested. She's always cares, shows compassion. Talking openly about your involvement with Christ. How awkward is it when you've been talking about everything else under the sun, you've never been talking about how you're a Christian, and then your friend is slamming the Bible or slamming Christians right in front of you? That's awkward. Then you got to come in and say, actually, I believe that. It's also awkward, like, if this is so important to you, why don't you ever talk about it? It's kind of like when that guy gets the girlfriend that nobody ever meets. You're like, if she's so important to you, why don't we ever hear about her, talk to her? Avoid predictability. This is the principle that, you know, a non-Christian person might feel like you're going to pressure them, that you're going to coerce them, that you're going to force your views on them. And we don't want any of that. We don't want to be, okay, we might be assertive, but we don't want to be aggressive. And so if you can tell this person feels tense, that might be a good time to play it cool. And you've already said what you needed to say and see if they're interested. A rule of thumb is if the person is showing more interest, then we give them more information. But what we don't want to do is give them a whole systematic theology course by the end of the night and they're just trying to think about how they can get out of there. Talk about making somebody feel uncomfortable. But if they're asking more questions, yeah, I think it's appropriate to keep giving information. I like to sense by kind of changing the subject to see if they really want to talk about this. So we could throw something else out. So what do you think about that game this past weekend? What do you think about this or that or the other thing? And then if they bring it back to spiritual things, I know they are interested. Praying for the non-Christian person. Old Halsby says, this fact sheds a great deal of light upon the history of revivals, a history which is often strange and incomprehensible. The reason why such long periods of time elapse between awakenings is simply that the Holy Spirit cannot find believers who are willing to do the heavy part of the mining work. Boy, I believe that. Our elders who got this church going have wondered who was it that was praying for them. They don't know. They know they've heard a couple stories. Grandparents, parents, I prayed for you 2 hours a day. Stuff like that. This could be true. He very well could be right. We find that most of us who have been converted have had someone praying for us. Someone who carried us personally to the throne of God while we were unconverted. It seems to me, he writes, that no one is so poor as an individual for whom not a single soul is praying, and who has no one who takes him or her personally and persistently to God in prayer. We know that the evil one is trying to steal the seed from people's hearts. We know that he's trying to distract and create noise. And boy, I hate to hear that it happened and we never prayed for it. Oh, we were there. We could have prayed. He has to flee. James 4:7. Resist the evil one. He will flee from you. Draw near to God, he'll draw near to you. We just didn't pray. Keeping a list of people for whom you're praying, family, friends, loved ones, and you just keep those on there every day. Watch Look, it's not just praying and then being passive. You pray for a job, and then you go out and fill out applications, right? And then you look for a job. The same thing is true here. Have you been praying? Yeah. Have you been watching? Watching for that open door. I'm going to argue, why wouldn't you do this daily? I've talked to people that are like, I have never been good at sharing my faith. I'm so bad at this. It's never worked out. Have you prayed for this every day? I've got a buddy who's a gifted evangelist, and yet he says the times I've seen people come to Christ was when I prayed for it every day. And you wouldn't believe the doors that open up. I have to agree, you know, I work for our church. A lot of my friends are Christians. Very difficult to share my faith. I'm talking about, like, I like to share my faith, you know, after teachings and so forth. I really enjoy that. But to be able to go out and reach people for Christ, very hard. I will say, though, as someone who is not a gifted evangelist whatsoever, and somebody who has, you know, I could argue no opportunities, quote unquote, when I have prayed for this, doors have been opened. I've been able to invite people out. I mean, dude, I'm old, right? I'm 33. I talked to a girl. She was cutting my hair, 23. She came out to a teaching, Bible study. Family, loved ones, you wouldn't believe the doors that open. Why not? Why wouldn't you pray for that?